Okay, well, at least I remember this part, and that is I usually say something like, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. I'll try that. So go ahead and do it. In this case, that would be the book of Bereshit, and we're going to finish the book of Bereshit or Genesis this week. Chapter 47 is where we'll start, almost at the end of chapter 47. And it's verse 28, and it begins like this. The parsha is called Vayechi, so and is the first word there, Vayechi, and lived Yaakov in the land of Mitzrayim for 17 years. So the days of Yaakov, the total days and years of his life, were 147 years. And the time drew near that Israel must die. So he called his son Joseph, and he said unto him, if now I found favor in your sight, I pray you, put your hand under my thigh. Deal kindly and truly with me, and do not bury me, he said, I pray you, in Mitzrayim or Egypt. But when I sleep with my fathers, you will carry out, my body, in other words, out of Egypt, and bear me in their burying place. And his son said, I will do as you have said. And then Yaakov says to his son, or he said to him, swear unto me. Now, this is kind of interesting, and it's one of those things that I always take note of, because this is a father who loves his son, trusts his son. Why is he making him swear? And I think, now I can't prove this is Markology, but we're going to see that it later on it's for Joseph's own good. When he is asked by Pharaoh, he's able to say, yeah, Dad made me swear. And so as a result, there's no question. Oh, yeah, you're going to go back and do what he said, whereas there might have been otherwise. So this swear unto me is, it appears to me at least, Joseph being given a proper understanding and an excuse, if you will, a reason to do exactly what his father asked him that he would have probably wanted to do anyway. But the swearing unto him makes it a lot more sure. Okay, so it says Israel bowed down upon the bed's head. And it came to pass after these things that someone said to Joseph, behold, your father's sick. And then he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Note the order there. It's different than it usually is. We usually hear Ephraim and Manasseh. And one of them, one person, in other words, told Yaakov, and he said, behold, your son Joseph is coming unto you. So, this time it's Israel, it says, has strengthened himself, and he sat up upon the bed. And Yaakov says to Joseph, notice how it's switching back and forth. It's kind of fascinating, isn't it? Here's what he said. God Almighty, and that would be El Shaddai in this case, appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me. And he said unto me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I'll make of you a company of peoples, and I'll give you this land to your seed after you for an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, who were born unto you here in the land of Mitzrayim, before I even came unto you here in Egypt, they're mine, Ephraim and Manasseh. Even as Reuben and Simeon shall be mine. Now, your issue, your seed, in other words, that you beget after them, they'll be mine too. They shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. So he is already seeing ahead to what it is we're going to see in the next book in Exodus and the rest of the Torah having to do with the inheritance of the 12 sons of Israel. Now, as for me, he says, when I came from Padan, Rachel died unto me in the land of Canaan in the way, when there was still some way to come unto Ephrat, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrat. This place, as you probably know, is called Bethlehem, the house of bread, and we know it as the birthplace of the Mashiach as well. Not, by the way, at this time of year. Then it says, Israel beheld Joseph's sons. So the two sons are there. Israel notices them, it sounds like, and he says, this is an amazing line. Okay, think about this. Whose are these? Now, he's just finished talking about it. Don't you think he knows? Why would he ask the question this way? There's obviously more going on here. Whose are these? And I have, over the course of years, read this, and I'm thinking, well, it could be a rhetorical question. But, you know, honestly, if I had to say prophetically how would we read this, I can't help but think he's asking the question that still matters today. Whose are these really? If we, in fact, and most of the English-speaking peoples of the world, would be understood to be descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, that's one of those things where there's lots of debate, but ultimately, I think most of the scholarly stuff that I've read tends to make me think this is true. And between Britain and America, you essentially have the two major places in the world where it looks like we have these descendants. And it's a fair question, isn't it? Especially today. Whose are these really? Now, Joseph said then to his father, these are my sons, whom Elohim has given me here. And he said, well, bring them to me, I pray you, and I'll bless them. Now it says, the eyes of Israel were dim because of his age, so that he couldn't see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them, and he embraced them. And Israel, it said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, and lo, Elohim has let me see your seed as well. Joseph then brought them out from between his knees. He fell down on his face to the earth, and he took the both of them, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right. So they're facing each other. The two boys are on the side that Joseph thinks puts the firstborn in position to have his dad put his hand on the firstborn's right, his right hand on the firstborn's head. He brought them near. Israel says, stretched out his right hand, and he laid it upon Ephraim's head, the younger one, who was, and he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. So what is his father doing? This man who can't really see, he's crossing his hands one over the other to put the proper hand on what he perceives is the proper son. And he blessed Joseph, and he said, the Elohim before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the Elohim who's been my shepherd all my life long unto this day, the Malach, the angel, the messenger, who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. And let my name be named in them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. So he is giving them the blessing of the patriarchs and of the Creator through the line of Abraham, Isaac, and, well, at this point, Israel. Now, when Joseph saw that his father was putting his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head, put it onto the firstborn's head, Manasseh. And Joseph said unto his father, No, wrong, Dad, not so, my father. For this is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. His father refused, and he said, I know it, my son, I know it. He too shall become a people, and he also shall be great. Howbeit, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. Now, at this point, it's worth pointing out, we know that, in fact, the lines of the descendants of the northern kingdom, in other words, the kings, are called the kings of Ephraim. They come through the secondborn, but the one here who is getting the blessing of the firstborn, his right hand, Yaakov or Israel's right hand on his head. So he knows and he sees. He blessed them that day and he said, by you shall Israel bless, saying, Elohim make you as Ephraim, note the order, and as Manasseh. And he did. He set Ephraim before Manasseh. And now it says, Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I'm dying here. But Elohim will be with you and bring you back into the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. So let's think about that one for a second. There are 12 sons, and as we're going to find out, we're going to see a repetition in here. Reuben has essentially blown it when it comes to the blessing of the firstborn. Meanwhile, Joseph, who arguably has been the favored son, certainly has done some things to make him worthy of note at this point. He now has two sons. They're being grafted in. There's an interesting turn of phrase. And essentially Joseph, because there are two sons, each of whom will get a regular blessing, that would be the way that would be done anyway if Joseph himself got a double portion. So in other words, grafting in Manasseh and Ephraim, both of whom are going to get a portion, is kind of like putting Joseph in the place of the firstborn and giving him a double portion. So I hope that all makes sense. By the way, the way that would work in inheritance would be that if there were, Yaakov had X number of sheep and goats and camels and all that kind of stuff, what you would do is say, okay, you got 12 sons, add one, that would be 13, and divide them into 13 portions and give the firstborn two of those 13 portions. He gets that double portion. All right, so now Yaakov calls his sons, and he said, get yourselves together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the end of days. And I always kind of take note of that, scratch my head a little bit, and say, that's interesting, because it doesn't sound like that's actually what he tells them. There are certainly elements here that that would qualify, but a lot of this is just later on, as opposed to the end of days. It would seem, but maybe he's right, and we don't know yet, because we're not there yet, but we do seem to be close. All right, assemble yourselves, he said, and hearken here, you sons of Yaakov. Notice the phrasing here, too. Hearken, you sons of Yaakov, or here, actually it's here, that's I believe it's the O-ear root, right? And hearken, there's the Shema root, hearken unto Israel, your father. So listen with your ears, listen with your spirit, with your ruach, your heart. Starting with the firstborn. Reuben, he says, you're my firstborn, my might, the firstfruits of my strength, the excellence of dignity and the excellency of power. Here comes the but, right? Unstable as water, you don't have the excellency because you went up to your father's bed. He's not happy about that. He defiled it with Bilhah. Then you defiled it. You went up to my couch. So no double portion for him. Meanwhile, it says, Simeon and Levi are brethren, weapons of violence, their kinship. Now remember the situation here. This is the unfortunate incident with Shechem, when they basically took it upon themselves to kill every man in the place. And obviously, Dad was not happy then. He still isn't. Let not my soul come into their council. Under their assembly, let my glory not be united. For in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they hewed oxen. Cursed be their anger. Not the boys, not the men at this point, but their anger. Cursed be their anger, because it was fierce. Their wrath, because it was cruel. I will divide them in Yaakov, and scatter them in Israel. Judah, number four. You shall your brethren praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. What is he seeing? Judah is the progenitor of the line of kings. We've seen this being developed, and now it's obvious Israel knows it, and he is proclaiming it. Judah's a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down. He couched as a lion and as a lioness. Who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, as long as men come to Shiloh, and unto him shall the obedience of the peoples be. Binding his foal under the vine, and his ass's colt under the choice vine, he washes his garments in wine, and his vesture in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. And I'll admit, that's another one of those that... I scratch my head about and say, huh, I don't understand it yet, but I tend to think perhaps we will. Zebulun shall dwell at the shore of the sea. He shall be a shore for ships, and his flank will be upon Zidon. Issachar is a large-boned ass crouching down between the sheepfolds. So a large-boned ass. He is a beast of burden, something that sounds reliable and steadfast. For he saw a resting place, it was good, the land that it was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant under task work. Again, the implication, Issachar is the one you turn to when things need doing. Dan, the word here means what he is just being told. Dan will be a Dan of his people as one of the tribes of Israel. So far, so good. Then this one. Dan, it says, shall be a serpent. That word there is nechash. That's the same word we see used in Genesis 3. He'll be a nechash in the way, a horned snake in the path that bites the horse's heel so that his rider falls backward. And then this is put in there. Interesting. I wait, and it's le Yeshua Techa. Oh, we recognize the root word, your salvation, Yeshua Techa, O Yahuwah. And I guess it's worth pointing out as well, of all the places where there is an interesting parallel here, it's the end of Revelation, where we see the 144,000, 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes. But wait a minute, counting Ephraim and Manasseh, there are 13. That's the one place in the book where, in fact, the 12 are counted. Ephraim and Manasseh are included, and what does that mean? Dan is not listed. So at the point where the 144,000 are gathered, Dan is not there. I wait for your salvation, O Yahuwah. Does that fit? Gad, which is the word there, means a troop. A troop shall troop upon him, but he shall troop upon their heel. As for Asher, his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. Joseph is a fruitful vine or bough. A fruitful vine by a fountain, its branches run over the wall. Now, what's interesting is this is one of those places where there are some words here which are rendered in different English translations utterly differently. And it's another one of those head scratchers. It is often said, we're told in the story here that Joseph was an attractive, a good-looking man. And this would perhaps explain why he had that problem with Pharaoh's wife. She thought he was hot stuff. But the other renderings kind of tend to focus on that aspect. And again, we go from a fruitful vine, branches running over the wall, to something very different. A son of grace is Yosef, says another rendering. A son of grace to the eyes. Girls mounted the walls. In other words, to see him. So notice that two very, very different understandings here. The archers, though, it says, have dealt bitterly with him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode firm or even perpetual, and the arms of his hands were made supple by the hands of the mighty one of Yaakov. From there, from the shepherd, the stone of Israel, even by the Elohim of your father, who shall help you, and by the Almighty, who shall bless you with blessings of Hashemayim above, blessings of the deep that croucheth beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. That's quite a blessing. The blessings of your father are mighty beyond the blessings of my progenitors, unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Yosef, and on the crown of the head of the prince among his brethren. So, again, another thing that we're seeing here, Joseph certainly at this point is the acknowledged leader of the family. He is, after all, the number two man in Egypt at this point. And that is one of the things that's being acknowledged here, the blessings that go with this. But if you understand this idea of what we're going to see with the two whoring wives, the two kingdoms, the two sticks that Ezekiel talks about that are not yet joined, this split that happens in the kingdom after the time of Solomon. And I can't help but think, as you know, that is an extremely important understanding and development. It literally has shaped all of history since then. The fact that we have these two whoring wives, two whoring kingdoms, and I have, as you know, the metaphor that is throughout Scripture is of whoring, harlotry. Now, that's a more polite Old English term, but the whoring gets the point across because Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is not happy about it. And what I have noted, and I don't think it's even arguable, really, the descendants of those two whoring wives are, and we're told this in both Ezekiel and Jeremiah, Ahola in the north and Aholibah in the south, a.k.a. Israel in the north, or Samaria, and Judah in the south, or Judea, you'll see it sometimes. And what are they? The lines of the kings of Ephraim in the north, or Judah in the south. And, of course, sometimes they're also referred to as the northern kingdom as the kingdom of Joseph. So he would be the crown of the head of the prince among his brethren. All right, Benjamin, it says, Benjamin, son of my right hand, is a wolf that ravens. In the morning he devours the prey. At evening he divides the spoil. All of these, it says, are the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is what their father spoke unto them and blessed them. Every one according to his blessing, he blessed them. Now, Rashi has an interesting observation about that terminology there. In English, it's not quite as clear, but I guess it says, his take is, when you look at the Hebrew, what you're seeing is that there are two blessings here, in other words. Everyone according to his blessing, he blessed them, and he spoke unto them, and he blessed them. In other words, the repetition, there is a unique individual blessing for each of the 12 tribes, and there is, if you will, a corporate blessing that applies to all of them. After all, they are all sons of Israel. And he charged them, and he said unto them, I'm to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. And that cave that's in the field of Machpelah, before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a possession. As a matter of fact, it's still a possession for a burying place. And there he says they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rivka his wife. There I buried Leah. The field and the cave that's therein, which was purchased from the children of Heth. So he has now sworn his son Joseph, take me there. And all of his sons have been told, yep, this is where I intend to go. So everybody knows. Now, when Yaakov made an end of charging his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed, and he expired. And he was gathered unto his people. So, chapter 50, and as we literally bring the book to a close, we're going to see Joseph fell upon his father's face, and he wept upon him, and he kissed him. Remember what Joseph was told by the Creator? Your son Joseph will put his hand upon your eyes. Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and they did. They embalmed Israel. 40 days were fulfilled for him, so are fulfilled the days of embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days, 70. And when the days of weeping for him were past, Joseph spoke unto the house of Pharaoh, and he said, now notice, this is where the thing that he was sworn to do comes into play. If now I have found favor in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, and say the following. My father made me swear, saying, lo, I'm dying. In my grave which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there you shall go bury me. Now therefore, he says, let me go, I pray you, and bury my father, and I'll come back. I will come back. He does not have to worry. Pharaoh does not have to worry that Joseph won't come back. Pharaoh said, all right, go up and bury your father. Listen, according to what he made you swear. So Pharaoh says, okay, this is important stuff. Dad made him swear. I'm not going to stand in the way of that. Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went all of the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, all the elders of the land of Mithraim, and all of the house of Joseph. So this is quite an entourage. His brethren, his father's house, only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left behind in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen. It was a very great company. This was quite a, like I said, quite an entourage. They came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and there they wailed with a great and sore wailing. They made a mourning for his father for 7 days. Now, when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning on the floor of Atad, they said, wow, this is something else. This is a grievous mourning to these Egyptians. Wherefore, the name of the place was called Abel Mitzrayim, which is beyond the river Jordan. His sons did unto him according to as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan. They buried him there in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for possession of a burying place from Ephron the Hittite in front of Mamre. Then Joseph returned to Mitzrayim. He and his brethren, and all that had went up with him to bury his father after he had finished burying his father. And when Joseph's brethren saw that now their father was dead, I guess it started to sink in, and now they're having second thoughts, concerns. They said, hey, you know what might happen now? Maybe that Joseph has just been playing nice with us while Dad was alive. Now, though, Joseph may hate us, and he will fully requite unto us all the evil which we did to him. The boys still don't quite get it. They don't understand that they have been forgiven. We deserve it. He's going to bring it on. So they sent a message to Joseph, and they kind of twisted the truth a bit, it sounds like. And they said, you know what? Your dad said, your father, notice, not our father, your father commanded before he died, saying the following. So you shall say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray you now, the transgressions of your brethren and their sin. For what they did to you was evil. And now we pray you, forgive the transgression of the servants of the Elohim of your father. And when Joseph heard this, he wept when they spoke to him. His brethren also went, and they fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we are your bondmen. We will be servants. Remember, this was exactly what they were willing to do, or thought they were trapped into doing so long before. Joseph said unto them, do not, fear not. Come on, man. Am I in the place of Elohim? Now, as for you, yes, you did mean evil. We've had this discussion. But Elohim meant it for good, to bring it to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. This was an important part of his plan. So therefore, fear not. You know, don't be afraid, guys. I will sustain you and your little ones. And he comforted them, and he spoke kindly unto them. So he could have been angry. In fact, he was sad. And he reiterated what he had already told them. I wasn't kidding you before. This was about the plan of Elohim. I have forgiven you. I still forgive you. And I, in fact, will sustain you and your little ones. Joseph then dwelt in Mitzrayim, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. And finally it says, Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, but Elohim will surely remember you. And this is an interesting one. It could be translated, the Hebrew here, as will surely attend or visit you. In other words, he will not forget. There's an understanding. It looks like Joseph has an understanding of what's going to happen too. Elohim will surely, again, that word is not zakar, attend you, bring you up out of this land, into the land, unto the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to our father, to Yaakov. So Joseph took an oath of the B'nai Yisrael, and he said, Elohim will surely remember you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. Now this is going to be something that, as we're going to see hundreds of years hence, Moses will accomplish. And finally, the last verse in the book. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him. And he was put in a coffin in Egypt. And with that, folks, the book and the story of the beginning, Bereshit, ends. And remember the traditional blessing. I think this is appropriate. Chazak, chazak, venit, chazak. Be strong and of good courage. And that is essentially not just good advice, but especially now.